We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, on today's episode of BuzzBeat, we bring on Sam Perley of Hornets.com. We get to chat about some early season trends, the challenges of playing a season with COVID, and in the pod with some Charlotte Hornets trivia. All that up next.
Blue Wire.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ, oh my goodness! Stunning with the left hand! Devontae deep! Oh my goodness! I don't believe it! A 30-footer to the diagram!
Just stop it already!
All right, everyone. Welcome into another BuzzBeat. This is Richie, and I'll be joined by Brian today. Hope you're doing well, Brian, and well-rested for the second half of the season that's about to come up. But more importantly, we have a guest that will be joining us today that not only writes for Hornets.com, but is also doing voiceovers now for the videos that the Hornets have been putting out recently on their social media sites. So we've got Sam Perley here. Sam, how's it going?
Good. I'm not sure the voiceovers is a huge part. I'm not sure that's a thing people recognize me from now. I kind of just throw those in 30 seconds, knock them out. But if that's something that people know me of now, then I'm more than happy to, yes, that is me on some of those tune-in videos.
Do you like practice, like, you know, or maybe do you watch videos of like Morgan Freeman or anything like that to kind of get some voiceover tips?
No, like we started doing them this year just because obviously not having fans in the stands, at least for the first half, and trying to find ways to get people, like the only way you can watch the game is to tune in and watch it or listen to it on the radio. And it's kind of trying to draw more people to it. And we just started doing them and it's like, hey, can you record this? I guess. And now I'll write the scripts for them, but now we started to kind of divvy them up into more of our, like, everyone in our social media group will do one, or if someone does one. The new thing was on the West road trip is somebody does one and we win that game. It's like, okay, let's circle back around and get this person again, to do them again. So we write the scripts and I'll send them out who wants to do it. It's up for grabs. So we got a good little rotation to it. So it's not just me or Sam Farber doing them all the time.
I swear it's like reassuring for me to hear other people being superstitious about stuff. It's like, okay, good. It's good. It's not that other people do this. It's not, I'm not the only one that, like, my brain isn't broken. Like a lot of people do this. And also, man, Sam, getting paid for voiceover work, like that stuff is the dream. I think people who get to do, like, if you're a voice actor, you just work a couple dozen days out of the year in an air conditioned studio. Like, I don't know. I swear voiceover work is like, it's a dream job. I feel like, or at least, if you have my skill set, it's a dream job or something like that.
It's harder than I thought it would be. I'm just recording them into my phone and it's like two lines of lines that I wrote. And like, you get super paranoid about it. You're like, we do 5, 6, 7 takes. He'll get mad if I don't say it, but one of our producers, Nick Bolick, who's on the road for the team, in the Western Conference road trip or the West road trip, did two of them and won both games, the Phoenix game and the Minnesota game. So he really said he brought the juice, he brought the energy. So credit to Nick Bolick for those two ones, which I should have done all six, but I didn't want to, you know, get too ambitious, too over eager. So yeah, well, hopefully we'll bring him out as much as we can in the second half of the tune-ins.
Well, Sam, anytime we have a new guest on, I like to get to know you a little bit more before we get into the Hornets here. I'm actually known for reading into people's Twitter bios. So I saw a couple things on yours that caught my eyes. One of them is that you're a Mets fan, and you also used to be a collegiate swimmer. Is that true as well?
Yes. So on the Mets, my dad is my dad's originally from New Jersey, Warren, New Jersey, Warren Township in northern New Jersey. So a group of Mets fan passed it on to me. Growing up in Charlotte, we obviously didn't have a baseball team here, professional team. Big Braves country, but I got really into the Mets and still kind of like, even with spring training starting, my brother is a huge Mets fan too. So like I'm getting like two, like it's almost, I don't know if sickness is a word, but I get too into it sometimes. Like I'm, you know, spring training at bats and like pitchers that are never going to make the team. I'm texting my brother, you know, such and such, should he make the team? No, it's like, it's silly. It's like everything that's like terrible. Trying to think of the word, like just maniacal, I guess, with baseball. So I love baseball. I love watching the Mets. But yeah, for sure. And then, yes, I was. I swam Division III college, swimming for 4 years at Connecticut College, where I was, not to brag, All-American a couple times. And wow. So, and then I retired. I just graduated and retired.
Yeah, I swear, swimming is the most exhausting sport. I remember my freshman year of college, we had the option of choosing a PE class, and some of the options out there at UNC Wilmington is where I went were just odd. Like they had like, you know, horseback riding, and sometimes the ones that they had were paired up with, like you would have one sport that you would like, but it was paired up with one that you didn't. So I signed up for one that was golf/swimming. And so for the first half we did golf, and you know, that was fine by me. And then when I got to swimming, you know, putting on those 15 pounds, you know, freshman year, I was exhausted, man, exhausted. And then the last kind of test that they had to get like a grade was to do, I think maybe 12 laps or six laps. I guess a lap is down and back, I guess, is in swimming. And man, the guy that was counting for me, he's like, okay, that's four. It's like, no, that's five. Just make it five, dude. Just make it five. I'm dying here. So I always have a respect for people that are swimming, but also playing like water polo as well. Like I can't imagine treading water that long.
Water polo is really hard. I did sound very humble saying I was an All-American on the last one, but that's why I wrote washed on the Twitter bio. I'm a long time removed from that. The way my conference worked, we didn't, we basically, the season started, it was small division three. So the season would start November 1st, basically do double practices every day until pretty much the end of February with meets on the weekends. And then the season was over, and then basically I had to stay in good enough shape to be ready to go the next November 1st. But water polo is really, really hard. I can promise you. I've played a little bit or tried to play a little bit, and it's really, 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 it's as hard as you think it is. Trust me. It's really hard. The treading the water though.
Yeah.
Aerobic. It's tough.
It's hard to imagine like having like top line, especially when you see it in the Olympics and you're like, this is literally world-class hand-eye coordination while treading water, like just nonstop treading water, which is just like, it, you know, it's unique really.
And then it's swimming back the other way. Possession ends, you go back the other way, it all over again, the tackling each other, kicking each other underwater, wrestling for the ball, lost the ball, and I'm going back the other way.
It's crazy.
And I got to do this for 30 minutes.
Isn't Jokic at Denver, isn't he a former water polo guy?
Yeah, so
I think so.
All his movements and stuff is former. That's very big over in Serbia and Eastern Hungary, Serbia, former Yugoslavic republics are all huge water polo backgrounds. So, yeah, that's where he kind of, if you look at his motion, that's exactly how a water polo ball is thrown.
We'll have to start a water polo podcast, Brian.
Maybe. Perfect. Perfect.
So, obviously, you didn't lead a path to becoming an Olympic swimmer, but can you tell our listeners the path that you did take and how you went from graduating to where you are now as a writer for Hornets.com?
So obviously, I'm not in the Olympics for swimming. Maybe I still have a chance. Maybe they open it up a little bit more. But I graduated in 2010 from a small liberal arts college in Connecticut, and did major in history and sociology, and was kind of like a lot of college kids that graduated when they were, didn't really know what they wanted to do. Kind of always knew I wanted to do something in sports, but I didn't really have a plan to do so. So I applied for a job at ESPN as one of the stats and analysis people, moved back to Charlotte, and then ended up getting hired probably a couple months later. So moved back to Connecticut, lived in Bristol for couple of years. And so as a project employee, so we'd work 9 months on, 3 months off, 9 months on, basically just watching college football, watching college basketball, and doing the play-by-play. So this is 2010. So stuff is a little bit different then in terms of like how information is sent out and phones and everything like that. But It was literally just watching the game on a screen here and then typing the play-by-play into a program. And then that play-by-play would populate the website. If there was a touchdown or a game-winning shot or something, you'd see it on your phone, Cam Newton, Auburn touchdown, extra point good, and do things like running the bottom line, the little thing, things that scrolled across ESPN. So did that for a couple of years, and it kind of got a little monotonous, I think. And I got a little kind of burnt out living in Bristol. It's not the easiest place to live. So moved back home, coached swimming for a year. So kind of dove back into swimming, to coach year round swimming for a year, and then went back to school at Northeastern University. I have a campus here in Charlotte where I majored in, I started kind of getting on the track because I think I want to do something in sports. So majored in sports leadership there, or went back to study sports leadership, I'd say, still coaching swimming. In 2014, I got a internship with the Hornets through a parent of a child who I was coaching's dad, I think, kind of got me a position. So I was a corporate partnerships intern for the Hornets for the very first season. The first season they got the name back, I was a partnerships intern. So I did that for a semester and knew I wanted to be in sports. And I kind of jumped at the opportunity to work for the Hornets, but it wasn't really something I wanted. I didn't think partnerships was really my avenue. So I got halfway through and asked if I could shadow the digital intern one day, or Matt Rashinsky, who's our, I guess, director of digital content. I forget what his title was back then, but I walked in his office and shadow you guys for days. You just want to be our next intern. It was literally just like that. Just said, actually, we just need an intern for next semester. You want to do it? Okay, sure. It was literally just like that. It was the craziest thing. It's craziest moment of my life, maybe looking back. So I found a way to get another internship. Did that for the second half of the season. Had to move on. Later that fall, got a job. This is somewhat coming to an end, so I know this is kind of a long route. I got a job working at something called Perform Group, which is a British-based company that owns a lot of sports analytics things. They own Sporting News for a while. They own Stats Inc. now. But I was working for a product called Opta, which was a commercialized, highly detailed, in-depth soccer analytics. So for like the MLS, Premier League, Bundesliga, La Liga, Serie A, so I was on the MLS side. So I wasn't doing any of the recording, but I was looking at the stats that would come through that we would compile through MLS games. And I would put together packages and then we would sell these packages to like NYCFC, Fox Sports. We'd watch Fox Sports games. And if something happened during the game, I'd have to look it up and, email whoever was doing the calls at the game on site. So it's a lot of MLS watching, not a huge soccer person. I learned a lot about it, but it wasn't really a soccer person. But while I was doing that, I was also working as a contract work for the Hornets, because the intern that was supposed to succeed me, I think, was from another country or something and couldn't get academic credit or something. Like very last second, they had that the intern couldn't do it. So Matt called me and was like, "You want to just do it? Contract work?" I said, "Absolutely, I'll do it." So I did those two things. And then within a year, a full-time job opened at the Hornets. And then I left the soccer analytics behind after probably 12 months. So I've been at the Hornets full-time since the start of the 16-17 season. So this is my fifth full-time season. Long route. A lot of like little odd jobs in there, a lot of random internships, freelance. And I was coaching swimming all the way up to probably 2016. So I coached that for 3 or 4 years, year-round swimming, like high-end competitive swimming for a while. So a lot of different stuff, a lot of time management, but it was so nice to kind of focus on one thing after a lot of different stuff, moving all over the place, different sports, stuff like that.
Yeah. I think I believe another Charlottean, that works around the NBA had the same job at ESPN as you did. I think Tom Haberstroh.
Yeah, he did.
Had the same job. I believe I've heard him mention that before, maybe even when he was on with us.
I think he did it 2 years before I did. So basically me and a bunch of people for like college football season and college basketball season. Yeah. And then when the summers are kind of dead, it's just baseball really. And then they bring everybody back. So I did that, kind of did odd jobs in the summer in Bristol, and they did one more contract, I guess. But yeah, he did the, I heard him on us, not in this podcast, but another one. He's like, it's exactly what I did. It's like 6 PM to 2 AM numbers all night. It's just, it's a crazy schedule there for sure. It was really, really weird.
I mean, maybe there are more professions like this, but I just, as someone that since I got out of college has worked in sports media, it like the career track is like not linear, you know. No. It is like, and you'll spend plenty of time being like, you know, I don't know if this is, you know, I don't know if I'm going to make it. I don't know if this is going to work. And yeah, just it takes a lot of luck. It takes good fortune. It really does, but it's like totally worth it. But yeah, it is not like a step A, do this, step B, do this, step C, do this, step D, profit and be happy with your job. Like it just does not, not work like that. You know, it does not, it's not how it goes.
Yeah. I tell people that want to get into it, like, it's not going to be linear. You're going to have your own path. Like this is what I did, but it was like, just jump at everything. If it's something in sports, just jump in it and do it and learn as much as you can. Like there were points when I was like sitting there watching, I kid you not, like 12 hours of MLS soccer in a row. Like, what on earth am I doing?
Yeah.
And writing emails to people that are on site in the broadcast booth for like a high level MLS game. Like you would type in emails and like within minutes, your fact would be showing up on the screen of the F. It's like, what in the world am I doing here?
Yeah.
But you find whatever it is, whether it's something in sports, you find a way to get something out of it. Don't brush it off or don't take advantage of it. Like the partnerships intern, I knew I didn't necessarily want to be in corporate partnerships for a long time, but I learned a lot about branding. I learned a lot about the organization and what it stood for and, you know, the things it was built on and how to represent yourself and the importance of like every little detail. And I think that was really important transitioning into media, attention to detail and branding, how everything is a reflection of your organization. So definitely find ways to kind of take something out of every little experience, even if it's not the ultimate end goal.
Have you ever said to yourself, I love the fact that I've had the same few pair of sheets since just after college and I've never really liked them, but I just kept washing them every week or two and putting them back on the bed like it's totally normal? Well, stop it. Brooklinen can make that voice in your head and the bad sheets on your bed go away. Brooklinen was started by Rich and Vicky, who tried to find beautiful home essentials that didn't cost an arm and leg. And when they couldn't find it, they founded Brooklinen as the first direct-to-consumer bedding company. Brooklinen has a variety of sheets, colors, patterns, and materials to fit your needs and taste. They have over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting. They are so confident that you will love their products, they even offer a 365-day money-back guarantee. And Brooklinen is so much more than sheets. They have comforters, pillows, towels, even loungewear, and more. Go to brooklinen.com and use promo code BUZZ to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more, plus free shipping. That's brooklinen.com and enter code BUZZ to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more, plus free shipping. Brooklinen.com and use promo code BUZZ at checkout. All right, let's get into this year's team. And I first wanted to start by talking about the craziness of this season, Sam. With COVID, it's thrown off a lot of routines. It's made things wildly challenging for a lot of reasons. You're more in the thick of it than we are working with the organization. So can you speak to the difficulties this season has been for this team, for the players, and you know what they've had to deal with this season?
Well, I will start by saying like the difficulties we encountered is nothing compared to the big picture. Obviously there's people going through a lot worse stuff right now. Not to put it on a morbid, you know, note or anything, but you know, it definitely has made its challenges in the sports environment. First off, we didn't play for 9 months. That was a challenge. I mean, we had the workout bubble, and things started to kind of really pick up maybe after the draft lottery in terms of content and things like that. But yeah, I would say that the biggest challenge is, I think it's just kind of communication. We know we're not in the office right now. We go to the games, the home games, and we sit, you know, kind of apart from each other. We have three or four of our team there, and that's the way we can communicate. But, you know, we've learned to kind of communicate online a lot more. For me personally, I think the biggest thing, and this is, again, this is just an observation, it's not exactly like a terrible, insurmountable challenge, but there's definitely a lot of things like having little one-on-one conversations with players and coaches and staff and learning a little bit. I mean, that stuff is not really, you know, if you want to work on a story and you want to have a one-on-one with somebody, it's hard to get those anymore. So you just got to kind of be a little bit more open. You got to be a lot more creative this year. I think that's kind of the biggest thing we've been stressing, is you got to be really, really creative. There's a lot of restrictions in place in terms of you know, not being able to release content where guys aren't masks, or if a, you know, somebody in the way background doesn't have a mask on, it can't go out. So they're very strict about the mask stuff and the COVID policy and making sure everybody looks good. But, you know, those are kind of little things and you find a way to work around them. And, you know, I just kind of tell myself that hopefully this is just, this is not a big problem. We're doing what we love. It's fun. Hopefully this is just kind of a 1 year thing and you make it work and you get creative. And I like to think that, you know, with the challenges that our group has had to go through this year, it's going to make us that much more prepared for next year and the years beyond when we're, this hopefully isn't as much of an issue, but it is challenging, but at the end of the day, it's fun stuff. We've gotten used to it. And, you know, we have a tremendous, tremendous team that's really, really working hard to get the best content. And I would say that the other biggest challenge is, everything is online now. Everything is digital. You know, partnership stuff is online, ticket stuff is online. Like there just isn't as much face-to-face human interaction. So everything's got to be put on the computer in order to get across to your audience. So it does feel like we're doing a lot more this year just because this is the platform right now, the computer, the social, digital, phones, everything. That's where you kind of get your information across. So it does feel like it's a lot more this year than it has been in years past.
Yeah, well, this is when you can, when teams or organizations or whatever can really lean on having, you know, good people that, you know, sort of like, you know, work as media or PR for the franchise. And it's also just like, it's crazy how quickly like we get our, just like our personalities and just our routines. It's like we get used to something, you know, we get acclimated. It's like how we survive. But yeah, just, you know, having everything be on screens and or Zoom or whatever now, it's just, a year ago that seemed crazy and now it's just sort of like a part of the day-to-day life. But despite all of this craziness, you know, the Hornets are entering the second half of the schedule. Yeah, I feel like for me, like it's gone by pretty quickly, but with a 17-18 record, they're approaching middle of the pack in the league in offensive efficiency. Obviously LaMelo's been a revelation. We'll get to him more probably in a little bit here, but I guess give me the one biggest thing that you could think of that has been like a key factor in helping this team, you know, sort of hover right around that 500 record and pick up just some really impressive wins. Dallas, Phoenix, I'm probably leaving some others off, but just like really some nice wins on the road or at home in front of no fans. So what would you say is the biggest thing if you could isolate it to that? Or if you want to break it up into two or three, by all means.
I would say it's probably two things. I would say they have discovered a very, very good combination of internal growth mixed with external additions. I think the two main guys who brought in LaMelo Ball and Gordon Hayward have been, and I know we'll touch on them shortly, but have been exactly what the team needed to do what they want to do this year. And then I think internally, especially after all that time off, you had pretty much every guy on the roster has taken a step forward. And that's exactly what you need for a young team. Cause you're not always going to go out. You're not going to be able to sign a Kawhi Leonard or a Paul George or like a top, you know, five superstar in the league in a small market like this, and Anthony Davis. So Miles takes a step forward. Terry has taken a big step forward. Devontae has taken a step forward in the sense that I know he's dealing with an injury right now, but has found ways to impact the game when the ball, that's a step forward. He's finding ways to impact the game when it's not as ball dominant as he's been. PJ Washington, I feel, is, you know, just had that 42 point game the other day. He's taken a step forward. So I think a lot of guys have taken a step forward this year, and mix that in with the external additions, I think has been really, really impressive. And then the second thing was the clutch time stuff. I think when you find ways to win close games, that's the difference. It's the difference in this league, because I don't know what the stats, but how many games with the average and our margin of victory in a game, maybe come down to a couple possessions. And if you can find your ways, I think the Hornets are 11-5 right now in clutch time games, and the number one net rating by twice as much as the next closest team. 11-5. I mean, you're finding ways to put yourself in position to win close games. And it's really, really remarkable when they get into that final little, I mean, you saw the Sacramento game. I mean, that was
crazy.
You can play, replay that game 1,000 times and you might win that once. Like, and I know it took a lot of luck with the missed free throws and stuff like that and fouling and, you know, that stuff happens. But I think it's finding ways to excel there, both physically on the court and the attitude that's like, hey, we're never out of this. We're never out of it. And I think that's what's been the biggest thing, is just kind of, again, everyone's taking a step forward internally, and they are just really, really good in late game situations right now. Some of that stuff will has a way of kind of ironing itself out, but ultimately, those are the two things I would kind of put as the reason the team is in the position they are right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's having as the volume of playmakers they have just is, along with, you know, JB's X and O's as a after timeout, you know, play caller is real. And it's all, like you said, this stuff is fluid, but even going, we're now on, you know, the second straight season of the Hornets really having a pretty good clutch offense, yeah. Clutch net rating. And again, some of that is shooting luck for sure. But it is just an interesting, it's continued to be a trend into this season. Now on the flip side, for the Hornets to sort of like get where they want to go, that can be anywhere. That could be the playoffs. That could be, it doesn't matter. Is there a specific trend that you see, or perhaps, you know, a limitation that must get corrected for this team just really to stay like in the hunt for the postseason, or maybe even get above the sort of like play in cut line? That's probably like, that's maybe a little pie in the sky, but for them to really like shore up their hopes as a playoff team, what's the next most important thing for them to do to focus on in the second half of the season here?
Well, it's kind of a vanilla answer, so bear with me here, but I think we even heard at the end of the Minnesota game, which is was a good win to end the pre All-Star break schedule. But I think kind of the consensus, and I'm not saying anything that's too out of bounds, I think just defensively, I think JB wants to get better on defense, and
right.
The teams that find themselves in the playoff picture that are playing meaningful games, I guess this year it'll be in the middle of May. Usually say the middle of April, but this year will be extended. is the teams that can defend and can step up and get stopped. And you saw, and I know Minnesota's had kind of a down year a little bit, but you saw that in the second half of that Minnesota game. It's getting stops, getting out in transition. And I just think defensively, I think they want to kind of get back on track. They started the year as, you know, kind of in that 10, 11, 12 range. And so it's, I think they're kind of down towards 21. You know, I think you can get top 15 defense and top 15 offense. I mean, that would be absolutely ideal. And part of that defense too, I think would be continuing to be a good rebounding team. And I think that's keeping your big guys in there. Rebounding fell off a little bit when Cody wasn't playing for that month. And I think since then it's kind of hovered right around that 15 to 20 rebounding percentage, defensive rebound, actually pretty good offensive rebounding team.
Yeah.
So I think those two things, I mean, teams that play meaningful games and want to get into the playoffs, they can defend and they can rebound. So everyone in this league can score. Like absolutely everybody can score in the NBA. It's finding guys that can get up and get you stops and stop 9-0 runs and get you transition opportunities and get you steals and get you live ball rebounds. And you go back to that Minnesota game. Again, I know that's kind of an isolated example, but I mean, that whole third quarter was just live ball rebounds. It's yeah. Steals, it's transition. I mean, when you can pour it on a team like that, it's an uphill battle. It makes you feel like you're down 10, but it can feel like 20 or 30. So those would be kind of the two areas, I think, just getting better defensively and continue to be a good rebounding team, not just the big guys, but everybody contributes to rebounding.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up the sort of the hustle effort plays from that Minnesota game. Del Curry said it during the broadcast. He's like, if you want to know why Minnesota's losing this game, it's because Charlotte's just outworking them for everything, for every loose ball, every rebound. I think it was actually in the third quarter that he said that. Now there are a variety of guys on this roster that are pretty good darn rebounders and pretty good at having a sort of a nose for the ball. No pun intended here, but one of those guys is LaMelo Ball. You know, certainly brought on, plenty of outside attention, likely the favorite to win rookie of the year. He's been incredible. And even for someone like me that I thought LaMelo was the best prospect heading into the 2020 draft, like he's been even better than I could have imagined in year one. 35 games into his rookie campaign, what are your impressions on Melo? And then once you're done with that, I'd actually like to ask a quick follow-up to that as well.
Well, I think I kind of speak for everybody that, you know, this is not something I think we saw coming as an organization. I think as fans too. I mean, the draft was a little bit weird this year because obviously it was extended. You know, you didn't have, usually it's in June and then it goes into November. So you have, usually it's 2 or 3 months after the season ends, you think about the draft. And I think the longer you think about the draft and the more you talk about it, the more you can like talk yourself in and out of stuff and you overthink things and overanalyze. And that's what that was all I did this summer was draft content and 2K league. That was all I did. But clearly knew he was talented. He came from such a unique background of playing in the NBL and playing in Lithuania when he was 15 and 16 and playing kind of these startup leagues. He really had no idea how he was going to, you know, assimilate to an NBA environment. And I think with the draft this year too, it was particularly odd because you had no NCAA tournament and you had a lot of the top guys not in very visible situations. You had LaMelo playing overseas. You had other guys playing in Europe. You had Anthony Edwards playing at kind of a bigger school, but not as big a basketball school. James Wiseman only playing 3 games. So you had a lot of guys at the top there that just didn't have the visibility that you normally see in an NBA draft. So, I mean, he's been exceptional. And I think it really started like that first couple preseason games. You kind of knew, okay, this is a little bit different. I would just say, I think the thing that stands out to me, and I think everyone kind of echo it, is just his, I mean, he just sees things before they happen. Yeah. It's whether it's passes, whether it's shot opportunities, whether it's driving lanes, whether it's, I mean, he's like, it's like one of those chess players that's 2 or 3 moves ahead of everybody. And it's fun because you can see him thinking on the court, you know, kind of moving the pieces around in his head. I'd say the things that really impressed me the most is his rebounding. I did not think how good a rebounder he was going to be. I knew he was tall, obviously, but his anticipation for rebounding, he never gives up on plays, follows his shot really, really well. Mm-hmm. And then, it's the shooting has been incredible. Like the 3-point shooting, I think I don't know what he's up to now, but ever since January, he's probably 38-39% yeah, now.
High 30s.
And it's just when you can get, for a rookie to shoot, I think at least let's say 35%. For a rookie to shoot over 35% is pretty exceptional.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exceptional. And to come in, I mean, it has done absolute wonders to his offensive game. Because once, if you can hit a shot like that, it just opens up everything in front of you. And for him, I think it opens it up even more with the driving to the basket and finishing at the rim. I knew we were going to talk about this, but the one play that stuck out to me really, really recently from him that was just like, this is different for a rookie, was in that Phoenix game. And I think the Hornets had like, I want to say like a 4-point lead with maybe like 2 minutes left and on back-to-back possessions.
I think I know what you're about to say.
Back-to-back. And it's just like, I don't know why, but those plays, maybe they're recently, but he had a dunk. He completely blew around DeAndre Ayton. Ethan got switched onto him on the perimeter and just blew around him. And then next play, next possession, he did the same thing on Jay Crowder, who's a really, really good defender, and kind of threw a right-handed layup off the top of the glass and in. Just like, these are two huge time baskets there for a rookie, and he just made it look easy. And that really stuck out to me. It was like, okay, now he's kind of, this is a new level of like, not only is he playing crunch time minutes, we're letting him go out there and make those kind of plays in crunch time minutes. So, I mean, he's been extraordinary. He's been everything, you know. There still is obviously room for development. You know, he's got to get bigger. I think, you know, defense is obviously still somewhat of a concern. I think it's been really good, particularly the defense, the playmaking, but you know, I think he's blown away expectations both internally and externally.
He, you know, he's high 30s on catch and shoot threes and pull up threes. 40% of his shots are at the rim. Just, he's been, I thought you were going to bring up the give and go play he had with Monk against Phoenix, which was just like, this guy sees the court. You knew from the first preseason game against Toronto where the camera crew like wasn't ready to catch up with one of LaMelo's like head passes. It was like a made shot. They were showing some room from Toronto jogging back on defense, and before you could see it, like that Toronto had, or Charlotte had bumped up the court and got a layup out of it.
Yeah,
completely crazy. I mean, like the PJ obviously stole the show in Sacramento, but like LaMelo was incredible in that game. Okay, so the quick follow-up I wanted to mention too was, I think it was after, it was during the 2019 draft lottery, and it was when the Pelicans won the lottery, and there's that great video where you can see the Pelicans sales department realize like, oh man, we're about to draft Zion Williamson. Like, our lives are about to change for the better here. LaMelo certainly didn't have quite as much buzz as, I mean, he had plenty of buzz, but, you know, was not the sort of like the, in the eyes of many, unlike Zion, was not the sort of like clear cut, number one prospect for the draft. And, you know, Zion was just different. He and LaMelo, I guess both are sort of like social media sensations prior to them, you know, along with what they do on the basketball court, where they're wonderful players too. But, you know, how much has just having like a guy like LaMelo that is not just an amazing player, but is very popular, how much has that changed you and your colleagues, your jobs on a day-to-day basis? People that are creating content to cover this team, and all of a sudden this guy lands in town. I mean, it has to have been just a complete game changer for you guys, right?
Yeah. It's an interesting question. I've been asked that a couple of times recently. I tried to respond. It was a little bit different. The lottery was obviously a big boom just because we hadn't been invited to the Orlando bubble and we could use at that point any good news. I think that was probably mid-August.
Yes.
We're getting ready to go to the workout bubble, but just any sort of like good news. The first time a team had moved up in 20 years and it's like, you're not even thinking about who you're going to pick. We're going to get somebody. It's good luck. Like, we just needed some sort of like spark, people to get excited. So, and you kind of had a feeling it was going to be who the guys were. And again, it was a weird year because you had some of the top prospects only played a couple games. LaMelo was playing in Australia. And I think his last game was around Thanksgiving. But I think once it kind of got to the draft, and you kind of got to go back and forth. And like I said, I was, you know, you're reading everything. And, you know, once we picked him, it was pretty clear that, oh my God, this is going to be pretty different. This is really, really different.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is, you know, it's like you said, it's like he was, I think in terms of like the IG basketball player, I think he was the second one. I think Zion was first. The guys that came up in this Instagram era and how they were consumed by people. So Instagram highlights, House of Highlights, Bleacher Report, stuff like that. Like, and I think you see it moving forward. I think it's become kind of become the way with a lot of these younger prospects, but that was a Wednesday or Thursday. And then he did the pre-draft thing on Friday, or that he came and did the thing outside Spectrum Center with the other guys, Vernon and Nick and Grant. And it was pretty clear this was going to be really different. This was going to be really, really different. Like, our follower count exploded. It just an absolutely never before seen, you know, growth. You know, I think the biggest thing for us is, you know, we just want to make sure that we keep it kind of balanced. You know, we want to make sure that that's kind of the biggest thing. You don't want to make the whole team about him. He's been a sensational player, sensational presence of the team. I think he's had a great impact, but I think the key for us is just making sure that, you know, it's having evenly distributed content. And I don't think there's been any lack of that this year, because you've had so many other guys. Terry's been great this year.
Yes.
Everybody seems like they've had something this year that you can make a moment or a, you know, Gordon's had a game winner and 44 point game. So, that hasn't been challenging, but, you know, we haven't had to like only make it LaMelo Ball content. So yeah, it's really different. It's really, really different. And I think it's different in the way that we, not having fans yet, you haven't really felt it like in real life. If that makes sense.
Right.
Like,
right. Yeah. Right. No, totally. It's different when you're at the games, man. And people are just, this is different. It's like everything can be digital now, but at the end of the day, like, you know, having lots of people in the same space, you know, it's just changed. The environment is different when you're around people. It's continues to be the case now.
I would say, yeah, the jerseys are flying off the shelves. Yeah. Like, you just pot. I mean, it's really cool. I love this team. I love this organization. I love the city I grew up here. And like, I cannot think of a better thing to happen to this organization, something like this. And it's not just about him. I think it's cool that this is bringing the attention to everybody. So we use the term league pass darling. So you have people that aren't Hornets fans. And I listen to podcasts now on The Ringer and places like that, Kevin O'Connor and these people, and say, they're tuning in to watch Hornets games. That didn't happen 3 or 4 years ago.
No,
we're not tuning in to watch it. They weren't tuning in last year.
Yeah.
They're spending 10 or 15 minutes talking about the Hornets right now.
Yeah.
It's so absurd to me. Just because we weren't that kind of team. So when you tune in to watch LaMelo Ball and you see Terry Rozier score 40 points and hit a game winner, score 20 points in the fourth quarter and hit a game winner against the Warriors. You tune in and watch LaMelo Ball and you see PJ Washington score 42 points. And you see Malik Monk hit an and-one buzzer beater basically against the Kings. Like, that's the stuff that I think is so good, because he brings people in, but he's creating fans in other ways. You see Miles Bridges with all these highlights and dunks, and Zach Lowe's talking about it. And so I think that's the coolest thing. I think he's kind of brought a spotlight to it, but when the eyeballs come to see everybody else, there's other guys. You're seeing tons of different stuff. Devontae Graham, Terry, Martins. It feels like everybody has contributed to some capacity this year. Gordon Hayward too. I know we'll talk about him, but sort of resurgence that he's had this year. So it's definitely different. And I think it'll get different when fans get back, and we get back to a more normal environment, but it's going to be exciting for sure.
I'm first glad that you brought up LaMelo's rebounding. I know you mentioned that kind of at the top of your answer here, because I think a lot of people notice the obvious with the passing and the dribbling and just the vision, but I've enjoyed how fearless he's been in attacking those defensive rebounds. And by grabbing them, it allows, you know, this offense to get started earlier. It allows players like Miles and PJ and Gordon to fill those lanes in transition and get those defenders out of position and scrambling. And this is exactly what JB has been preaching this season. And the Hornets have been really good in transition when they get the chance to do so. And, you know, back to your question about what needs to change for this Hornets team, it feels like anytime this team struggles, it's because either of turnovers on the offensive side or the defensive issues or the defensive rebounding issues. And I think by having guards and having wings that can rebound, it allows this team to play small. And LaMelo is just one of those players that can crash the glass and grab those rebounds and obviously start that transition offense quicker. Player that has been linked, Sam, to LaMelo this season has been Miles Bridges. After starting all but one game last season, he's got a new role coming off the bench as the backup four. I was actually surprised to see that both LaMelo and Miles, when they're playing together, they actually have a negative net rating. But it was just interesting to me. I thought for sure that would be in the positive. But regardless, he and LaMelo bring this kind of energy and chemistry that's been very evident. What strides have you seen from Miles Bridges this season, despite being moved to that bench role?
Yeah, and just real quick, the statement you just made, I think it's funny because I remember the point you brought up about the rebounding guards. Malik Monk, I think, had a comment last year about his improved rebounding. He said, what's led to the rebounding? And he said, it's kind of the assumption, if I get the rebound, I get to bring it up court. So I think that skill kind of incentivizes some of these guards. If you get the rebound, you're the one that can bring it up court and either take it to the basket or facilitate or something. So if that's what it takes them to go in there and rebound, go ahead and do it. Miles has had, you know, quite a year. I think it's really impressive. You know, he's, you know, 3 years, started as a lottery pick, or I guess was a lottery pick. And then he came off the bench for the first half of that year and then started maybe the last, like, 2 months or so for Jeremy, since Jeremy Lamb back to the bench. And the last year was a full-time starter. I think the only game he didn't start last year was the game that Nick Batum started in Paris. Otherwise, you know, for the French hometown thing. So, and then went back to the bench this year and is playing a completely different role. I think what stands out to me the most is Miles' acceptance to that, because you go into the offseason, you add someone like Gordon Hayward. Mm-hmm. And I think he kind of knew that, you know, I'm going back to the bench. I understand that, but finding a way to impact the game and accept the role. I think buying into your role and doing what you need to do and help the team win is such an undervalued and underappreciated element of player development, because not all lottery picks would be comfortable that have started for a year and a half would be comfortable going back to the bench and say, hey, we're going to teach you a completely new position at this point. You're going to be a small ball four instead of a starting three for the first 2 years. You could see some guys demanding a trade in a similar situation or refusing to accept it, or, hey, I'm just going to kill time for 2 years and I'm going to head on out of here. But you haven't seen that. He's completely bought into it, and it's been so big for that bench unit. Two things that really stood out to me with Miles this year, basketball wise, creating his own shot off the dribble has been, that's not something that, like, he was bad at before. It was something he just didn't do, didn't even attempt. But creating separation on 3-point shots, even having a couple attempts a game, is something he would never have done before. And how good he is at attacking the basket, as we know, and getting downhill. If you can, going back to the LaMelo thing, if you can create your own shot, I mean, it opens up everything for you. And then his facilitating, I think, has been a lot better. He's a much better ball handler this year, or he is ball handling more. And it's facilitating, finding guys. I forget what game it was. Might've been the Minnesota game, but every game he has one or two, like, really kind of nice backdoor cuts, or he finds somebody on a drive or a dump off right around the basket to Biz or Cody or something. That's like, that's just little stuff. He's just doing a lot of 4 or 5 little stuff things a little bit better this year. On top of the scoring, the rebounding, tax the basket, great. Obviously we've seen great transition player with LaMelo and the guards and stuff like that. So I think he stepped up as a leader too. If you see a guy that's, say, this guy started all of last year and he's taking on a new role this year, I think that reverberates through your younger guys and the rest of your roster, makes everybody else buy into what they're supposed to be doing too.
And to your point, it's only been 29 attempts, but he has made 45% of his pull-up 3-pointers this season, which is just crazy to think about. And it's almost like a prerequisite that, like, JB's got to have, like, 4 guys on the court that can handle the ball and pass the ball with the offense, you know, the way that it is, Brian.
I just think his, like, especially because Zeller's missed the last couple of games, I think Miles has been huge obviously Charlotte has like plenty of guards who can make plays, but for them to get some sort of like playmaking and creation out of the front court in the middle of the floor, mm-hmm. you've seen them run all these horns. I mean, they've been doing them all season, but it really feels like the last couple of games, those horns looks where they throw it to Miles at the elbow. He pitches it back. Then he comes off a flare from either Biz or PJ. And then they go into pick and roll frequently with Miles as the guy running the pick and roll action. Like, Bridges is crazy because he can kind of just do a little bit. I mean, he really is like a jack of all trades, just with otherworldly athleticism. And I think starting last season, but you know, really into this year too, just the strides he's made. He had a couple really nice plays as a team to like a help defender against Minnesota the other night too. And like that stuff, obviously we all see the highlights and the lobs, and that's so cool. It's interesting that this is a guy that you have that you can run pick and roll through. He has some pull up 3-point shooting, and he's also the best lob guy on the roster. And he guards 1 through 5, you know, has at times guarded 1 through 5 this season. So just, it's cliche to say someone who has a diverse skill set is unique, you know, whatever, but Miles kind of is a unique player in his own right. And he really does just sort of like, when he's playing his best, he's really doing a lot of different things. He comes in and just sort of like fills up the stat sheet and has two-way impact.
Yeah, he's been really, like I said, I don't think it's rare. You know, you have somebody come in that was 11th overall pick and started for a long time, and then you go out and bring someone like Gordon Hayward in. It's not, you know, more often than not, I think guys would be hesitant to, you know, I don't want to do this. You know, this isn't, I shouldn't have done this, but he's bought into every single thing. And it's not like he has to be, you know, a 45% 3-point shooter. If he's just enough to make, you know, to make him a threat out there, that's all you need. You just need a little bit here. Or if he's just a good enough threat in pick and roll, or he's just a good enough threat to do this or that, like just enough for the other team to account for it. That's all you really need. And I think that's what's helped him so much and helped the team. He's not, you know, lights out at a number of things. You know, his athleticism, I would say he's lights out, but he's found a way to kind of impact a lot of different areas. He doesn't have to be sensational, you know. Corner threes too, I think, is another thing that he's really kind of, he was good at that last year, but I don't have it in front of me. I guess I would say his 3-point percentage is probably closer to 37 or 38 now. And I think last year was maybe like 32, 33. So that's a big jump, 5 percentage points for sure. So yeah, he's been really, really invaluable for this team this year.
Last player I want to get to is Gordon Hayward. He's definitely been a steady presence for this team. He adds playoff experience that this team badly needs. I had asked him the other day about being more vocal this season, considering the role he has to play. He definitely seems like a guy that probably leads more by example. But I have seen him, you know, in the course of a game, give someone a little rah-rah speech at the free throw line, or you see him get excited after he made that game-winning shot against Orlando. So I'm sure he does get a little vocal at times, but what have you enjoyed the most about Gordon, and what do you think his biggest strength is as a player?
I think what I've enjoyed the most, and as I was looking at this question you sent, and I think you asked it a couple of weeks ago in a Zoom scrum, about how he's kind of reminds you of that guy at the YMCA. He's kind of got like that older guy, like the dad moves and stuff.
Yep.
I think he even asked about it. He's like, yeah, you know, I think I do have a little bit of that. And that just, I think kind of the overarching is he just is so good at picking his shots offensively. Mm-hmm. He shoots a lot of mid range. And I know last year it was kind of the Hornets gravitated much towards the layups and three pointers and making that the primary. They were pretty high up in the NBA in terms of frequency of shots that were those two. But if you've got somebody that can hit mid range, like he can, and hit in the restricted area, like he can, I mean, go for it. Like he's that good at it. So I think that's what stood out to me the most is offensively, he can pick his shots so well, and it just looks so smooth. I think the first basket he had when he came back in the Minnesota game was just like, I forget who was on him. It might've been some of the big guys in Minnesota. I forget who it was, but he just kind of like spun him around. And then like, finally, when he did a 1 foot kind of turned around off his back and then perfect swish from right around inside the elbow. And it's just like, there's nothing that's not going to make highlights, but that is a beautiful looking basketball play. So I think that's been really good. And I think leadership too. I mean, if you bring in someone like Gordon Hayward, who's scored 10,000 points in his career, he's been an all-star. He's been in lots of playoff. He's been on 2 different playoff teams. That's a guy I want near me because I can learn something from him. And I don't think you can necessarily overlook everything he's gone through in Boston. I mean, obviously the situation didn't transpire the way he wanted to. He basically had to lost 2 years of his career. He lost one for the injury. He lost 1 year trying to come back from the injury.
Yeah.
And to say everything he went through to get back to where he is, I think that's pretty remarkable in terms of leadership. And this guy clearly has something, because we all kind of remember where we were when that situation happened in Cleveland, how sad it was. Even if you weren't a Celtics fan, you know, but I just think he's a number. I think you can find ways to resonate on guys, even if you're not the most vocal of leaders. If your style of leadership is leading by example, or, you know, this or that, you know, I think there's ways to lead, even if it's not necessarily yelling at guys face to face.
His skill set is crazy. He can basically do everything on offense. Like he really can play both sides of the pick and roll, pass, score from every level, post up. Like, he shoots, you know, above average from literally every spot in the half court. It's just crazy how skilled he is. And I'll let Richie jump in here, but I really do think, like, his addition, like, obviously he and LaMelo fit. They're very good next to one another. Now, I think long-term his development, or him getting to play with LaMelo, because those guys, LaMelo's rookie contract, Hayward's deal in Charlotte, they mirror one another. And I think long-term playing with Gordon a lot over the next couple of seasons is going to be very good long-term for LaMelo's development, to play with a big wing like that, that can catch and finish, that can catch and dribble and finish, that can play make. Like, it's a good thing. And I think something that will pay off, not just in the, you know, not in the next 5 months, but maybe in the next 5 years, the next 10 years. I just think it's like almost an ideal fit of a guy you could have put around LaMelo for year one, just in terms of development of your young point guard.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing, like Sam said, like there's a calming presence and a leadership that he brings, but the team can run offense through Gordon in the half court. For all the good things that this offense has done this season with the ball movement and getting high quality shots, you still need a player that you can run offense through, especially when it starts to stall a little bit. But I do love his mid-range game, Sam, like that, like, spin fadeaway shot that he has. It's almost, he has it down to an art at this point. It's something that you can kind of count on most nights. And to Brian's point, even though he is heavily kind of focused in the mid-range, he can score on every level of the court. It just happens to be the fact that he does favor the middle of the court there. So, Sam, you're a stat guy. You love stats. You love factoids. So Brian and I are going to put you through some Hornets trivia here. We're just going to alternate questions, and we will see how many you get out of six. So we'll just do three apiece.
Are we going to delete it if I don't get any of them right?
Or correct.
Go back and edit it again?
Yes. No matter what, you're going to come out of this as the trivia master. Like, the people that are listening to this episode, we may have to doctor out what I'm saying right now, just so that we ensure that
do multiple takes. Let me get Google up. So I'll show my hands the whole time.
Perfect.
I mean, these questions aren't too obscure. We put my wife through some trivia on this podcast, and if she's listening right now, hopefully she's not taking this too hard, but we kind of dumbed it down for her, I will say.
I thought she did pretty well. She did. I thought some of those questions were pretty tough.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so question one, Sam. In terms of the franchise single season assist totals, Muggsy Bogues accounts for 7 of the 10 in a single season. He actually had the most assists in the team's second season in 89-90 with 867 assists in a season. So he counts for 7 of the 10. Mm-hmm. There are two other point guards in this top 10 that are on this list for single season assist totals. Just name one of them.
Felton's one of them, isn't it?
He is not the answer. It's Baron Davis or Brevin Knight.
Brevin Knight was in our other guess. I was thinking I was going to say one of the two. Okay, delete that. We'll start again.
Delete.
Felton wasn't in there, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're moving. We're going to go something cool. We're going to go to scoring here. We're moving from assist to points. In terms of the franchise's single season high point total, Glenn Rice tops that list with a little over 2,000 or a little over 2,100 scored in the 96-97 season. He's also fourth on that same list for point production in 97-98. If you would please name one other player that falls within the top 5 for single season points scored.
I feel like this is a trick question.
No, it's not.
Is it Kemba one of them?
Kemba is one of
correct.
Them.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
And the other one I want to say is, I know Kemba got close, but I know he wasn't going to, is it LJ one of the other one?
Yep. Yeah, there you go. Correct. Got them both, actually.
Okay, that just sort of like makes up for the first
bonus one. Points. Yes, okay, exactly.
Yeah. So now I'm even again.
All right, so this one actually might be one of the more obscure questions that I have on here. So third-year forward Miles Bridges is from Flint, Michigan. He's actually one of three NBA players from Flint that have played for the Charlotte Hornets. The other two players never played on the same team, but they were fairly close in terms of like the era that they played with the Hornets. One of them played in the late 90s and one of them played in the early 2000s. Name one of those players, obviously outside of Miles Bridges, that is from Flint, Michigan.
This is a tough question, man. And look, I'm going to give a hint. Neither one of these guys played at Michigan State.
Is Glenn Rice one of them?
Glenn Rice is one.
And the other one is, you know, it's funny because I don't know if this is cheating, but I wrote a story about this 2 years ago about being from Flint with Miles and his like relationship with Kyle Kuzma and Monte Morris.
Yeah.
Also both from Flint. And I want to say JaVale McGee is also from the area.
He is.
It's not Ramil Robinson, is it?
Eddie Robinson.
Eddie Robinson.
That's a good guess, though. You went in with another Michigan guy, right? With Ramil Robinson.
I know Ramil Robinson briefly played for the team. I want to say he was like maybe in the expansion draft or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Glenn Rice's teammate at the university. Yeah. They were on the 89 title team together.
Yeah.
All right. So good. There we go. What, 2 for 3 here, but with like a lot of bonus points along the way, too. So we'll find a way to, I don't know, really make the trophy shinier than normal when we send it your way, Sam. But in terms of win percentage, Charlotte's second best season was in 97-98. They won 51 games but lost 2 doubles in the second round of the playoffs with Michael, the eventual champions. That was the same season highlighted in The Last Dance. What team did the Hornets beat in the first round of those 97-1998 playoffs? The one hint we'll give you with this, the opponent featured future Bobcat Steve Smith and ex-Blue Devil Christian Laettner.
The Hawks, that? Right?
Yep. Bing, ding, ding, ding. The Atlanta Hawks.
See, I should have trusted my gut and interrupted you before you gave me the hint to look more impressive.
No, we'll edit that part out too, all right?
Yeah.
And that way it looked like you were not finishing my sentence. Yeah, you were finishing the
question. I don't need any help. Let me give you the answer.
All right. Question number 5 of 6 here. Speaking of the Hawks, LaMelo Ball recorded his first triple-double of his career when Charlotte defeated Atlanta earlier this season. As we know, he became the youngest player in the history of the NBA to record a triple-double. The question is simply this, Sam. Which Charlotte Hornet has had the most triple-doubles in his career?
Anthony Mason.
There you go.
He's a player that would be perfect for this year or this era's game.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah.
Loved him.
Yeah.
I think he had 7, and I want to say Nick Batum had 5. Correct. That was the closest anyone's been in recent history.
Man, killing it. Spot on with all of those those numbers. Yeah, Mace would be Larry Johnson would be like built for today's NBA too. As well. But here we go. Final question, number 6. The franchise has played 63 games in the playoffs since its inception. Of those 63 games, how many has the Charlotte franchise won? And this will be multiple choice, so we'll give you a range here. A, less than 15. B, between 15 and 20. C, between 20 and 25. Or D, more than 25.
So 53.
63 games.
63 games.
So it's almost like you have to do the math because you know they're at least getting 3 to 4 losses every playoffs.
Yeah.
Like in the wins. This is more a math problem than a trivia question. This is what I'm saying in advance if I don't get it right. I think the C, whatever the range for C was going to be.
You are correct. It is 23 games. C is the correct answer. Yeah. Yes. 23 wins. Yep.
You like the deductive reasoning I did there?
I did. You brought some SAT skills to the Busby. We appreciate that. And it's no surprise that that you aced this or almost aced this
almost
trivia
aced round. It. I got a little too excited with the first question.
Well, you got me second guessing about that first question because you were so confident and quick with it with the ring and bell. Now, I'm going to have to go look this up afterwards.
Dude, I was about to pull up. I was like about to type basketballreference.com into my web browser here just to double check. But 5 out of 6 is that's pretty darn good. Pretty darn good.
Before we go, Sam, let everyone know where people can find you and your work.
Yeah. So Hornets.com. Again, I kind of do the writing there, but we've got a tremendous team, lots of content, video stuff. We've got a Real Access series, player interviews, coaches interviews. Just go there for all that stuff, Hornets.com. And then just my personal Twitter is @Sam_Perley. It's mostly just stats and articles and some play-by-play during the games. It's really just Hornets stuff. I won't bore you too much with my personal life or anything on there. Occasionally, there'll be a Mets tweet here or there or a swim tweet, but only when I'm getting really, you know, into baseball season. But yeah, at Sam Perley or @Sam_Perley and then Hornets.com. And then all of our social handles @Hornets Facebook and @Hornets and IG. We got unbelievable team, Diana Biffle, Wes Robinson, Nick Bolick, Jesse DeBolt, Matt Rashinsky, Jay Starling, go on and on and on about the group that we have there and really, really working hard this season. It's been a challenging season. It's been a fun season. It's been a really rewarding season, but I'm just kind of one part in the big picture over there.
Sam, I'm a little OCD, so I have a suggestion for Hornets on Twitter, on their social media. Mm-hmm. Is there any way they can capitalize the H on Twitter for their handle?
Capitalize the H. I will. You don't like the lowercase H?
I don't know. I like
the lowercase. I do. Yeah, I do, actually. I like lowercase, like, as like a Twitter sort of thing, like in just in general, like people who talk in lower, people who type in lowercase.
They try too hard. They try too hard to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never actually noticed it. I know
you will now.
If you type out at Hornets and put the H uppercase,
it'll still
do the same thing. And I know other teams do the capitals. I will make a note and that'll be the first thing.
Okay.
When we come back from the All-Star break, the first thing we're going to address is not the second half of the season, is making that lowercase H and uppercase H.
Perfect.
I thought because it was a proper noun. So I just didn't know. So
that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's just
Richie's a teacher. So the attention to detail is important.
Oh, your wife brought that up. Is that,
No, I'm a teacher as well. I'm a teacher.
Oh, you know, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Both teachers. Yeah.
Well, I have lowercase S for Sam as well. So I don't know if that drives you crazy at all.
I
think Brian is lowercase B as well.
I do. I don't want to go down a whole other path, but it's just like, man, I made my Twitter handle when I was like, in college. I just didn't know it was going to turn into a professional thing. You know, it's just like, I would have done it. I should have changed it a couple of years ago, but like now, I don't know. It is what it is. So we're just going to roll with it for now, at least.
All right, guys. Thanks again for tuning into another episode. We really appreciate you guys. As always, we love a rating and review on Apple Podcast. For Sam and for Brian, I am Richie. We will see you guys next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.